sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Market's moving higher. China's CPI is also moving higher, and we have a jam-packed show for you today. We have a guest. His name is Al Brooks from Brooks Price Action and BrooksPriceAction.com. And also, as I promised you last week, we're going to talk with Kevin Hoffman. All this and much more on episode number 296 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. So we have a lot to talk about today, and it is now coming on the middle of January, and so far there was that big turn, that big change in markets where we were kind of looking like things were just going to fall over and get all sorts of ugly when the fiscal cliff situation right before that, and things were, you know, the VIX was up and things were crazy. And here we are. It's like, hey, it's a new year. Markets don't want to go down. They don't want to go down for any reason. And what we're finding is a lot of volatility in individual names. We saw what happened with Herbalife last week. And we saw that, you know, there was that kind of crazy move when we had the fight with the hedge fund managers. We have very little economics of last week. So what were we left with? We're left with some of the China data. So we're left with, the kind of last push of some of the reallocation into the new year from maybe mutual funds and hedge fund managers. And, we got a lot of things going on. But what I really wanted to focus on before we get to our guest today was some of the things that we thought would be interesting for you to take a look at, because maybe you haven't looked at this particular app for your phone, or maybe you haven't taken a look at this particular technical indicator. So I thought what Kevin and I would do was go over some of the things that we like to look at, some of the things that we think are kind of cool, and maybe you can then put that into your own daily and weekly routine for research and investment. So Kevin Hoffman is here with us. What's going on, bub?
Not much. And you?
Oh, it's been, it's been crazy. It's been busy.
Same as usual.
It's all good. Kevin Hoffman, of course, works with me and is the guy that crunches numbers, does all the analysis, and really comes up with some great things here. And if you've ever seen the charts that we put up on the blog and the various research reports we do, well, my name is on it, and so is Kevin's, because he does a lot of work for that. But anyway, I thought we'd talk about a few things, and in no particular order. It's kind of like our best of list, right?
Yeah, I think we're just trying to come up with some various different sites that we like, some things that we look at throughout the day, and also some things that can help out some of the listeners.
So on the list, we kind of wrote down a few things, the best of like brokers and platforms. And we're talking more trading here and more active investing rather than kind of a buy and hold, let something, go. Because what's the point of listening to the news, and what's the point of worrying about trading and technical indicators and all that? I mean, right?
Right. That's right.
So we picked up, what do we have? We have TradeStation as one of our favorite.
I think we find TradeStation as one of the better platforms that we've kind of tested over time. And, it's mostly due to the fact that it's fairly user-friendly from the get-go if you want it, but then you can also really customize it to whatever you'd like.
Right. I mean, well, it has a lot of things. And I would venture to say that most people that use TradeStation don't really know the power of TradeStation.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can automate systems and automate different trading strategies. And there's also probably quite a few trading strategies that are already canned and available on the TradeStation network.
And you can actually create automatic trading strategies and test them.
Right. Yeah, that's a big thing. I don't know if I've seen that on many platforms before, is the whole backtesting thing, which is a good thing on one hand, because it allows people to test their strategies, but it also is kind of a false prophecy, because you can really kind of tweak it and make it look as good as you want it to.
For the past. The big thing of that is two things: understanding how the back testing works inside of there, because that's very important. And the second thing, which is primarily, by the way, for equities, but the second thing is also using a time frame of significance. In other words, you don't want to use a month or week. You can use a long period of time.
That's right.
To get any kind of reasonable things. The other thing that's interesting about this, they have something called Easy Language. And if you are good at programming, it's probably one of the easier ways to create your own indicators. So let's say you want to say, You know, I really want to see on a chart where the 50-day moving average moves above or below the 200-day moving average. And maybe it's there, but they make it pretty easy to program that and then color it and do all sorts of things. Not that easy, but easy enough that you can kind of do that.
That's right, yeah. And they also provide a lot of classes and various other, you know, education seminars in order for you to help you build these various different strategies. So it's, you know, it's really great for the advanced trader, but it's also a great program and platform for the beginner or, you know, not so savvy computer programmer.
Right. The other thing is that actually we've written a few indicators and some of the things that we use in trigger point research, the concepts and the algorithms and the mathematics behind that. There are some things that are going to be coming out very shortly, actually, on TradeStation. We also have them for eSignal and MetaTrader and OEC and NinjaTrader and Bloomberg. But the TradeStation one and a few of the other ones are really cool. Nice colors in terms of not just because of the colors, but it gives you alerts. The other thing about TradeStation, which is really different, and I really want to press this. By the way, we're not getting paid, unfortunately, from them. What I like about TradeStation is that they have something called Radar Screen, which is unique to trading. In other words, right now, if you want to look at a chart and find out, you know, information about the 50-day moving average, where it is, and all these different things you may want to put into a chart, or just find out things and get alerts of a chart if something moves above or below something, how do you do that? So TradeStation is this thing, it looks like Excel, where you can put in a ton of stocks, and it's like the calculation of the chart is inside of a column formatted page.
Right. Yeah, that's a big advantage for TradeStation, definitely.
Yeah. So we also like for efficiency and cost, although not the most user-friendly and probably the worst customer service in the world.
Yeah, customer service is,
non-existent.
I don't think it's there.
Yeah, no. That's a department. They closed off that department.
No, but Interactive Brokers is a very cost-effective system. It's cheap. You know, they provide you with a free platform to trade. They do have some add-ons that cost a little bit of money, but not very much. But you know, their fees and their costs for trading are extremely low.
Right.
And it's an efficient program, especially if you're running multiple portfolios.
Right. Then we also have Schwab. If you want great customer service and
right.
you're willing to pay a little bit of a price and you want a great website and you want to know all the bells and whistles, people to hold your hands through transfers, transactions, you want an 800 number to call all the time and you need all that. And they have a couple of different platforms for more of the active traders. They're Street Smart Pro. They also have a couple of web-based apps. Oh, by the way, did I show you this? Just to get back to TradeStation for a second. Did you see the new mobile app?
I did, yeah.
It's cool, right?
Oh, it's very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
You could actually trade and get live quotes and all that through TradeStation. It's still in its infancy because you can't do a lot of indicators overlaying things and that. But if you just want to get quotes and stuff, it's there. Anyway, Schwab is also – they have a mobile application as well. Let's get on to some of the right? I think it's a good – segue into technical indicators and what do we kind of like, because there's a lot of things out there, a lot of freebies, you know, you can just throw on the MACD, you can throw on the RSI, you can throw on
averages,
anything you want.
Yeah, a lot of the typicals people are using. Some of the ones that we really like to look at, though, from I guess like a broader based market, just to kind of see a general direction, are the McClellan oscillator as well as the Spearman indicator. Those seem to give the best indications of whether a market is, you know, either overbought or oversold, or give you some kind of an indication of where the market's going to either continue to go or if it's going to reverse back down.
Right. You didn't mention the KRI. You know, by the way, the KRI does not stand for Kevin's Reversal Indicator. It may, but it's the key reversal indicator, which we use a variety of kind of things behind the scenes to calculate this overbought and oversold, because we didn't think that any one particular instrument was a good idea to figure out, okay, is the market overheating? Is it oversold? And as a matter of fact, on several occasions, by the way, we look for extreme points.
That's right.
You know, anything between there is questionable. You know, it may be a little bit oversold, a little bit overbought. But we don't use like just an RSI, for example. We don't use RSI at all to just look at that. We don't look at a MACD to see that, because so many times you can have a market in general that is overheated or overbought in terms of a traditional metric, but what happens is it stays that way for a while.
That's right.
And you really want to find those inflection points where it's really kind of out of control.
Yeah, that's right. It's it's one of those things where it's the old adage that markets tend to move higher and longer than you expect, and they move down further and faster than what you expect.
Right.
And
that's important. Can I just say that again? Seriously, say that again.
It's what markets moving up longer and further, and down faster and further. I think I said. I don't even know. I'm losing it.
No, but that was a great line. That was a great thing. Markets move up for longer
than you expect.
Longer than you expect.
Right.
And markets move down faster and more furious. And it's kind of the downside is always a much more compact move.
That's right. Yeah.
Oftentimes, not all times, but oftentimes. The up move is usually.
Especially when you're in a trend up environment.
Yes. Right. Exactly. So there's that, the KR indicator, which we put out regularly here. And we're actually in the process. We can't do all this at once. We're kind of putting out a variety of different subscription models for people that you've asked for. And that's coming as part of another package. The other thing is that, just to mention, to get back to the things that we've built, whether it's based on market profile and algorithms based on volume and price levels, and you know where the real inside trading is going on, where the levels of kind of resistance are, but more importantly, where there's no resistance and there's no way to you know, where there's kind of like an easy movement area.
Yeah, you're talking about faster zones and slow zones versus, you know, stocks are consolidating versus breaking out or breaking down.
Right.
You know, and that's you know, we use a lot of those kind of tools from TAS. So TAS Tools is very good in finding those particular zones and then also, you know, kind of eliminating one side of the trade so that you're not – your bias is not setting in. You know, if there's a stock that you really like Apple, you know, you're not sticking with Apple even though it's continuing to move down and through these zones.
Yeah. And just to let you know, those are available over at taskmarketprofile.com. I think there's a variety of different packages for, again, plugins for everything but TradeStation, because TradeStation is going to be going direct, but eSignal, OEC,
MetaTrader,
NinjaTrader, Bloomberg, blah, 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 blah. There's a whole bunch of them out there. And there's you know, about five or six different indicators you put on, and one particular indicator which kind of summarizes all of it to give you kind of really in your face what to do kind of concept. What about research? You know, research we talk about a lot. You know, this Bloomberg, which is, you know, 1,500 to 2,000 a month.
That's right.
Per terminal. Great news, though. Great research. Timely. But kind of
takes a long time, too, to learn, though.
Yeah,
I mean, you're talking about a lot of information and a lot of stuff that you kind of have to filter through. So Bloomberg's not really the best for the, I don't want to say, I guess more like the average investor. Really what we, you know, look at for the average investor, and actually it's even some of the stuff that we use personally, is IBD and MarketSmith. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And what else do we use?
FinViz. FinViz is great for news because it has a couple of different things. You know, where you can look at do some screening, and you actually have news feeds and insider buying and metrics and fundamentals and technicals and really cool stuff there. MarketSmith's great for their charts. It's a subscription. By the way, you're gonna have to pay something if you want good data.
That's right, yeah.
You know, you can't rely on Yahoo free all the time because, you know, think about that. You get what you pay for.
Yeah, and, you know, the one thing that these particular companies do really, really great is consolidating all the data. Consolidating and scrubbing. You know, like MarketSmith, they really provide a consolidated view of the various different fundamentals that are fairly important to a particular company, like your revenue growth and your sales growth or your EPS growth. Which are all good things to look at, but you know, if you wanted to do that on your own, you could. I mean, you could really go out and, you know, go through the company's financial data and look at their earnings and find them on Yahoo Finance. But you know, this is just a great way to look at from a snapshot perspective.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the, you know, where you get news from, where you get information from. And again, some of the ones we talk about, you know, you could look at Wall Street Journal, you could look at FinViz and see their news feed. But a couple of things that we like is briefing.com. They have a variety of different packages that, you know, range for different type of investors. Some are, you know, the trader. I use Briefing Trader, which gives you kind of some trading things and some real insight into the markets, and they're feeding it. And they have a whole newsroom and room full of traders. You like Rand Squawk?
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to say something brief about the whole Briefing Trader thing. It's really great. You can, if you have multiple monitors, or even if you have you know, one monitor. You can stick it on the side of your screen and just scrolls through throughout the day. You know, it gives you all the various important news for the stocks that are, you know, well traded, and gives you various earnings guidance and
on the economy, what's going on, an earthquake in Guatemala.
Yeah, I mean, tells it's a great system. That.
You know, what's happening? Hey, be ready for the crop report coming out in 20 minutes, and what to expect. And what they also have is the availability to filter and alert on securities.
Right.
So you can actually go in there and put your own securities in there when that comes up. And then they have two different sites where you can have 2 to 4 different panes on your page, and you can kind of say, okay, on the left pane, I want to have all my stocks and what's going on there. On the right side, just give me general information.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's a great thing. And then you also mentioned RANSQUAWK, which I find very attractive because it's audio. So if you have a chance, you know, you can turn something on, you know, whether you're at work or if you're at your trading desk or whatever it is. RANSQUAWK is a great way to listen in to what's going on in the market. And they're fairly timely and are very quick at getting out the important news for basically more global markets, more intended for index traders or ETF traders, but also, you know, some individual stocks where there's some issues, where like Boeing had their various issues. You know, they reported that these issues were happening, you know, fairly quickly, so that traders were able to take profit on that.
Right, that happens right on like a voiceover IP or some kind of automatic line into your computer.
Yeah, the other great thing is it's free. Yep. You know, you can't beat that.
But is it
a delay, though?
It's a delay. Well, yeah. That's not good. I mean, you got to get the check it out for the free one, and then if you like it, go to the other one. The other one is in terms of I guess it would be scrubbed research. Those would be the two ones, right? Because, you know, the research we talk about with Bloomberg, or you can go to IBD and whatever, get your raw data, and then you get this other information. And then there's one next level, which is the idea of newsletters. You know, now you got opinion pieces.
Right.
Now, there's not a long list of opinion pieces that I really like, because, you know, I think that you got to take what's out there, take all the news and all that. You got to kind of deal with the various biases that any particular news organization has, which is more of a phenomenon that's really occurred over the last dozen years or so. You know, it used to kind of have, when somebody station said they were fair and balanced, it was fair and balanced. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't fairly balanced, you know what I mean? Which kind of can go either way on that discussion.
I'm not sure you can get that here,
right,
in this country.
No. So, you know, newsletters. I mean, Dennis Gartman has a good newsletter. He writes it at, like, I don't know, 3 o'clock in the morning or something ridiculous.
I don't know how that guy sleeps. Or if he does sleep.
I don't think he sleeps. I've seen him actually look like he's dozing off. I'm not kidding either. I swear to God. He looks like he's talking and his eyes are closing. Now, maybe that's the way he is, and that's the way, but I'm like, he's sleeping.
He might be. You know? He might be. But a lot of his information is directed toward commodities. I mean, a lot of the stuff is, you know, for grains, gold, silver, stuff that's, you know, quite interesting to the average investor, but acting upon it is a totally different thing.
Right.
Really geared a lot toward futures traders, and then also towards institutions, really.
Right. A lot of grain, though. He talks about, you know, the grains quite often. You know,
yeah,
a lot of gold.
Yeah, wheat, corn, soy. Yeah.
And then also more sophisticated trades, like, you know, he's trading gold and yen.
Right. Like, yeah, he does do a lot of spread trading.
Like, who's doing that, you know? I mean, who's, you know, where's that happening?
Not the average investor.
Yeah, exactly.
Not here.
And then we have also McClelland. Tom McClelland puts out a variety of things. He puts out the McClelland Daily Report. He puts out a market report. He puts out a whole bunch of things that good information and clean. And his stuff is based on a lot of his models, and it's more like an in and out of market, you know, concept. And then some other things that are very interesting to look at. And then, of course, is you know, Curzio's company. I think that's a good one. Is
Stansberry
Research. They have a gob of stuff. If you want to be super small cap, if you want to be gold related, if you want to be that, I mean, they just have the newsletters there. I love reading that stuff. So,
problem with these newsletters, though, is they can get quite expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Very expensive.
Right, right. You got to pick your poison and figure out what you want to do with that. Financial apps. So, you know, kind of, I have an iPhone, you have an iPhone, but most of the stuff is available for any particular platform.
Right.
Which ones do you like? You know,
I mean, I think RANSQUAWK has an app, and a lot of the, you know, the companies that we previously mentioned have, you know, great apps, whether it be TradeStation, Bloomberg, Thomson Reuters, you know. But if you actually have a Bloomberg terminal, the Bloomberg app is amazingly powerful.
Yeah, that's very good.
There's a lot of traders, institutional traders, that actually use the, you know, the Bloomberg messaging service right there on their phone or on their iPad or whatever when they're on the floor or away from their desk. But you know, really, I find the, you know, one of the best apps is, you know, both the Bloomberg and the CNBC, because they send you these alerts. Sometimes they're quite annoying.
Oh, they're terribly annoying.
CNBC especially, because it makes that loud beeping noise.
Which you cannot turn down.
You can't?
No.
There's got to be a way. No?
I think if you turn your phone off, it still goes. I swear. It's unbelievable.
How about that do not disturb?
That do not disturb is really, it hasn't disturbed me since I turned it on. It won't accept calls since January 1st. By the way, if anybody knows how to fix this do not disturb thing, there's a glitch, whereas the do not disturb, if you turn it on, it doesn't
disturb. You're talking about on an iPhone.
On an iPhone, yeah. It's supposed to have a schedule, let's say after 11 o'clock at night and up till 7 in the morning. Hey, don't ring, don't do any noise, whatever. But when you put it on after January 1st, it never rings or never gives you any noise. And there's some glitch that Apple has confirmed, but they're not doing anything. It's not fixed.
But at least the great news is about the Bloomberg alerts. They come in silent, which sometimes you see them. Sometimes you don't.
Well, yeah, any kind of help would be great. Now, the other one is Econo Day. You can go to econoday.com, I think it is. It's a free service. We can get economic information. It's more of their website that's mobilized, which makes it really good. But CNBC, what I like about CNBC, there's really one thing. I don't like their futures information. I don't like some of the market information is fine. But essentially, you could set up lists of stocks or ETFs, whatever, 20 per list, and their real-time data during the day.
Yeah, that's great. The whole real-time data thing is amazing.
For free.
That CNBC is doing that for free.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. I thought we'd also talk about some of the things we do, you know, some of the TV we watch and some of the TV we don't watch. I try to stay away from a lot of financial television, and, you know, all we're doing is getting opinions, and which is fine, but it kind of sometimes clouds the you know, your judgment on some things. I mean, you can have two guys coming on like we had last week. You know, one guy loves JCPenney, one guy hates JCPenney. One guy, you know, loves gold, one guy says gold's going to $200. One guy says the market's going to 1600, one guy says it's going to 300.
Yeah, it's really hard to determine watching these shows where you should be unless, you know, you're watching a one-person show like Kramer where he's like, you know, in your face telling you this is great, this is not great. But, you know, you're always going to have those battles, whether it's on Fast Money, which I know is something that you like.
Yeah, I like that show.
But, yeah, there's always the conflicting opinions. And, that you know, that's the way to sift through the data and find out if it's a good idea or not. But, you know, really, a lot of times it might be analysis paralysis.
Yeah. I mean, I like Fast Money. I like Kudlow on CNBC. And I like, as this definitely puts me into the old man category. No, it's not C-SPAN. Dvorak listens. He's an avid watcher of C-SPAN, which – I got to tell you something. If I watched C-SPAN all the time, I'd be fat as a house because you gotta distract yourself and keep yourself awake. You got to be eating and stuff like that. And I'm seriously. Am I wrong?
I don't know.
Go try it one day. You have to eat during that. It's just not possible.
Is it like watching golf then?
No, golf, you go to sleep. That's the best thing to go to sleep with.
Yeah, definitely.
Because they got that kind of white noise always in the background and people, you know, lulling you to sleep about it. I could watch golf. Golf?
Golf on Sunday.
Golf on Sunday, fall asleep, and Gone with the Wind puts me right out. You put that out. I'm done. I'm cooked. But the other one I like to watch is Meet the Press on the weekends. I think there's some cool stuff on there, but, you know, I think that puts me into the old man category. Anyway.
I would say so.
Yeah, thanks. What about some fun things, financial distractions, a quick list of things that we do during the day just to kind of get our minds off of things and know. We don't want to know about the porn sites and all that, so let's kind of just skip right by that. I know one thing that you like a lot is Kickstarter.
Yeah, I love Kickstarter, and not necessarily for the fact that, you know, I'm going on there and buying a lot of things, and actually you're not really buying anything, you're pledging towards something, but, you know, there's a lot of great inventions and, you know, various different people that are startups, you know, trying to put out these various ideas that they have, which are really quite cool, you know, because these guys are coming up with really cool ideas that, you know, normally you wouldn't see in the marketplace.
Yeah.
So, just a, you know, a little distraction here or there that looks, you know, to find a good thing on the site.
Right. I like Pandora Indie Pop Rock Radio just to kind of like cool off the day a little bit.
I haven't heard of the Indie Pop Rock Radio.
No. Go look on Indie Pop Radio.
I might have to.
Yeah. Engadget. I like to look at what the new cool things are, although it gets a little repetitive, same thing over and over. But there's some cool stuff. I mean, I saw that new phone by, I think it was Nokia, the flexible screen phone.
Oh, yes, yes, sir. Right.
I'm not
right.
Sure what that's good for. Maybe, it's, you know, but it's interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting, but it's got a long way to come.
Right. The new, the other thing was the Whirlpool outdoor barbecue/fire pit that is really hot in the middle and you can do stuff. And then around it, when you put a glass down, it chills it.
That's amazing.
And you need that for the rooftop.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, that's good. We have to get that for the rooftop.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else do we have here? We have also...
Reddit. Reddit's also one that I like quite a bit. It's, you know, it's just kind of a list of people's various different posts or pictures or whatever. Indiegogo is also another one, which is similar to Kickstarter, where it's, you know, people putting up these various inventions or ideas that they have, or movies or productions, whatever. But just a good way to, you know, kind of get involved and, you know, see what's out there.
Yeah, great. Well, Kevin Hoffman, I appreciate you coming aboard today and helping me out with some of this. Got a lot of good information, and we'll try to put some of this stuff on the show notes for this week. And by the way, we're going to have to talk about maybe next show or the show after. Commodity alerts are doing great. I mean, the total return on it has been awesome. The equity alerts, a little bit of a rough month in December because the markets were a little bit indecisive, but that was pretty good. And people can still get a 14-day free trial to that by simply going to triggerpointresearch.com, right?
That's right, yeah. 14-day free trial, and you know, there's no no obligation.
Yeah, so anyway, thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon, buddy. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Now, before we get to our next guest, I want to mention to you, of course, our great sponsor, GoToMyPC.com. GoToMyPC. You know, for so many of us, it's just so much of our jobs are tied to the office computers and networks and special programs, important files, and kind of get like chained to your chair sometimes. And you want to be more productive, but how do you do it? Well, GoToMyPC. It's a very secure remote access tool from Citrix. And what you could do is from any computer or tablet or smartphone, you can actually connect right to your office and you can actually remotely operate it. And with GoToMyPC, you can access the entire network and use any program, save, edit, and send a file virtually from anywhere. Plus, GoToMyPC is very simple to use and sets up in minutes. So what I want you to do is get your free trial. You can check it all out. My listeners get a special deal, 30 days free of GoToMyPC. Visit GoToMyPC.com, click the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code PODCAST. And download it, and you'll just get it. It's great stuff. Any app you can use, the program you can use from the computer, it's available for mobile apps, etc. So let's get right to our next discussion for the show. You know, I always say that if you want a guest to come on, all my listeners, just send me a note and maybe mention a name, and we'll see if we can get them to come on and find out if they have something interesting to say. And wouldn't you know it, here we are. We got a listener request to ask Al Brooks to come on from BrooksPriceAction.com. He's a writer of many books. He writes just quite often on a blog. He also manages a trading room and all sorts of great things. And actually, I'm pretty excited to talk to him. So, Al, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, Andrew. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming aboard. So let's kind of set this up. You do commodity trading, futures, E-minis. Options, you have a trading room, there's message boards. Kind of give me the whole lowdown of what you do on a daily basis.
The most important thing that I do is trade E-mini futures on the 5-minute chart. I just use the day session. And I have one indicator on my chart, a 20 bar exponential moving average. I also have the equivalent of the 15 minute 20 bar exponential moving average on the chart and the 60 minute as well. And all I do is I look at price action all day long and try to determine who owns the market, the bulls or the bears.
Right.
And then I try to structure trades that make good sense mathematically. And I take lots of trades all day long. If the market is trending, I tend to enter with stops in the direction that the market is going.
Right.
If it's in a trading range, I tend to enter with limit orders, buying below bars and selling above bars. And for the most part, I scalp, and by scalp, I mean if I'm trading the E-mini, I'll take 1 or 2 points out. And if the market is trending pretty well, I'll try to swing for 4 or more points for part of my position. And yes, I have a website, and I run a chat room, or actually some traders run a chat room, and I speak in the chat room all day long, saying what I think is going on with the E-mini chart, the 5-minute chart. And I also now have a course, BrooksTradingCourse.com, that I'm selling online. And it's 25 hours.
Yeah, I saw that.
Videos.
Yeah.
That talk about, on the videos, I talk about how I trade the markets and how I read the markets.
Yeah, you had a lot of patterns on there. You had a lot of different things. I kind of went through the list, and it was a pretty long list. So it was very impressive. I think that it's, what is it, 1116 minutes? Is that what you calculated or something like that?
It's about, I haven't looked at it recently, but it's about 26 hours.
Mm-hmm. And you keep adding to that. And your idea is to help people along if they're traders and also educate them. I know. What, you know, it's interesting because you and I talked before about, you know, the whole idea of having, you know, what's on your chart. We talk about, you know, you like to keep it simple, and you've this is your strategy in terms of how you do things, how you see things with clarity in your mind, and this is what gives you the best risk reward. And again, from what you're saying, but it's interesting because don't you think that when people first start to trade, whether it's a stock or a future, they kind of just put all these colorful, you know, nonsense. They don't even know what it means, but these one line cross another. They put all these indicators on a chart and all these things on a chart, and they're not even sure what it means, but they use them anyway.
Yeah, I think that's unfortunate. And I think, you know, when people start trading, one of the first things they do is they subscribe to a magazine and they page through the magazine, and they need a charting package, and the charting package highlights all the different kinds of indicators that the package can generate. And I think traders are then coming away with the impression that successful traders use all of these indicators. And to me, just put on Fast Money and listen to what the people say on Fast Money. You know, when's the last time you heard them say, you know, I took this trade because there was a divergence in some oscillator? All you hear them talk about is support, resistance, and momentum. Oh, the market's going up strongly, I bought. Oh, the market came down to a moving average or to a prior low or to a trend line, and I bought. And that's what I think most successful traders do. They don't spend time looking at a bunch of indicators. The indicators are all derived from price.
Right.
And if you can learn how to, you know, simply read, look at a chart and understand what the chart is telling you, you don't need all of those indicators.
So there's a lot of patterns out there. You know, there's flags, and there's descending triangles, and there's we can go through the whole list of different things that are out there. Are there any particular patterns that you look for that are kind of, you know, your eyes? I'm kind of trying to take myself into your head for a second and think about how when you look at a trading screen, kind of your head and your eyes imprint patterns over the screen. Is that probably a correct statement?
Yeah, I look at the chart all day long, and I look at every tick, and I've been doing this for 25 years now. And I formulate opinions as to who owns the market. You know, is the market, if I had to be in the market this second, right? If I had to take a position this second, would I be long? Would I be short? And where would my stop be? What would my profit target be? And, you know, so I'm much more interested in buying pressure, selling pressure. You know, is there a sign that the bulls are stronger than the bears? If there is, I want to look to get long. Are the bears extremely strong? If they are, I want to get short.
Mm-hmm.
And, sometimes the market is better suited for entering on stops. Other times the market is going more sideways, and it's better suited, it's better traded entering on limit orders, betting that breakouts will fail. You know, so for example, we're speaking on January 10th, and over the past couple of weeks, the vast majority of entries were limit order entries.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if the market is breaking above a prior high, rather than looking to buy, I look to sell.
Right.
If the market's breaking below a prior low, instead of looking to sell, I'm looking to buy. Mm-hmm. I'm expecting breakouts to fail because it's a trading range market, and in a trading range, breakouts usually fail.
Yep. So, you know, one of the things that, did you use other time frames too to get a bigger picture of what's happening in terms of the general nature of the market? So you're really kind of just dealing with, okay, here's the day, end the day, thank you very much, tomorrow's another day, and let's start again.
Yeah, I'm more of the latter. I do look at the other charts, and when I'm speaking during the day in my chat room, you know, occasionally I'll talk about the 60-minute chart or the daily chart or some other markets. But when I'm trading, all I care about is the 5-minute day session chart.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, I print it out and I, you know, go through it bar by bar to myself, and I look at every conceivable trade. You know, every bar, I look at the high of the bar, the low of the bar. Will there be buyers above that bar? Will there be sellers above that bar? Mm-hmm. Will there be buyers or sellers below the bar?
Right.
And to me, that printout at the end of the day, I always see trades that are very, very clear. And you know, I don't, and I so I, that's all I care about. You know, right. How will the chart look at the end of the day? And the pattern that I'm seeing right now, real time in the middle of the day, you know, how will that likely look at the end of the day?
Right.
If it looks like something that at the end of the day, I'll look at it and say, wow, that was a good buy, then real time, I want to buy it.
Yeah, lately, what's been interesting is you can kind of, if you look at the shorter term charts, whether 5, 10 minute, whatever the time period is, but short term, I'm talking about short term on the E-minis, what you could see, I think, is this kind of very, it's very simple in a way that when they sell off or when they get, or when they start buying, either way you want to slice it, okay? After maybe there's just some, you know, just a big run in one direction or the other, and then it starts to kind of roll the other direction or whatever. There's kind of a flat top or a flat bottom I've been seeing a lot. Have you noticed that?
Well, I understand what you're saying. You know, I talk about that very thing all the time. The market trends, and then it goes sideways. And then once it's sideways, the probability of the next move up or down is about 50%. And the bulls, let's say the market's going up and then sideways, the bulls want the trend to resume, and the bears want the trend to reverse.
Right.
And when it's in that trading range, I'm looking for signs of buying pressure and selling pressure, and that gives me a clue as to which side is likely to win.
Mm-hmm.
And if the evidence is strong enough, I'll take a position. If the evidence is not strong enough, I'll wait for the breakout. So if it's a bull breakout, I'll look to buy. If it's a bear breakout, I'll look to sell. If the breakout looks weak, I'll look to take a trade. I'll look for it to fail and take a trade in the opposite direction.
Right,
but you're right. The market trends and then goes sideways. And then traders are wondering, you know, what it will do next. Will it reverse or resume?
Yeah, it's the only two things that a market could do, right, is either trend or consolidate. It's only the only two possible things it could do, right?
That's right.
It's nothing,
all day long.
Right.
All day long. The market is either trending or in a trading range.
Yeah.
And if it's in a trading range, it'll soon trend. If it's in a trend, it'll soon go into a trading range.
Right.
And, you know, that's how I look at the markets all day long. That's the market cycle. Trend, trading range, trend, trading range, all day long.
And that goes for any chart, by the way, or any time period, if you really think about it. It's just the same thing. Yeah.
Well, you know, on my brookstradingcourse.com website, I have a chart. It's three charts with no label on, no labels on the charts, no time and no price. And I make the point that if a person were looking at those three charts, he or she would not be able to tell which was the 1 minute chart, which was the 5 minute chart, and which was the daily chart.
Right.
Also, the person would not be able to tell which chart was the gold futures chart, which chart was a Forex chart of the euro versus the dollar, and which chart was General Electric. You know, to me, all charts are the same.
Right. That brings up an interesting point.
I trade them the same. I don't pay attention to the axes or the time frame.
That brings up a couple of things. You know, you've been doing this for, 25 years, you said, or so, and you've seen a lot of things change over time. Some things stay the same. What, over the last number of years, have you found that has been some of the biggest changes? Obviously, electronic trading and things of that, but is there any difference in what's going on in the markets and anything that you've seen? Is it that you've had to adjust to, adapt to, or, you know, kind of, I'm not doing that kind of trading anymore because it doesn't work, or, you know, anything you can think of?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. You know, now I think about 75% of the volume being traded, maybe more than that for the E-mini, but at least 75% of it is done by computers, which means algorithms, and that means math. And to me, trading is entirely mathematical. You know, most of the trading is done by mathematicians, physicists, engineers, you know, the people who design all the algorithms. You know, it's all math. And the market is filled with measured moves. The computers, they can't just take profits because, oh, the market's gone up a little bit. They take profits because the market has reached a mathematical level,
mm-hmm.
a calculated level. So I think, I personally like all the computer input, the computer influence on the market,
mm-hmm.
because I think it tends to make the markets more perfect. It reduces the edges, right? At any given instant, you know, years ago, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you know, I think it was a lot easier to trade because there was a lot more uncertainty. You know, you'd get these big swings and, you know, perfect signal bars, and that's not the case right now. You know, now, I think a lot of the signal bars just don't look right. The trends, people used to call it program trading. Trends now can be relentless and always look like they're reversing and just going, and they just go on for a long, long, long time.
Right.
So to me, the edge, even if you're really good, your edge is very small.
Yeah.
So I heard a trader, a hedge fund trader on television a few months ago say something. He was kind of defensive, talking about individual traders. He was saying that it's absurd to think that an individual trader can make money trading because he spent like $1 million and 13 years developing his algorithms, his programs.
Right.
He has a team developing his software. And it's really, really hard to be successful long term. And he's right. It is really, really hard. And I think it gets harder, but there's always an edge out there if a person gets good enough. And getting good enough does not mean that you're super smart. Being smart is nice, but any trader knows they quickly realize that it's trading profitably requires much more than being smart. You have to be able to control your emotions.
Right.
For me, I talk all the time to people about, they ask me, Al, how can you not get upset, by this, or the markets are rigged, or the markets are, whipsawing us around. To me, I just look at the markets and I say, oh, look at that. Look what it's doing now. I have no emotional connection to the market.
Hmm.
I talk about trading the I don't care size. If you're going to trade profitably, you have to be doing what the computers are doing. And they're not making trades based upon fear or anxiety or stress or confusion. They're making trades based on math. Emotion is no part of it. So for me, if I want to trade successfully, I have to trade a small enough position size so I truly do not care, right? So that I can stay entirely objective. I see ads all the time for brokerage firms saying, open an account now with just $5,000 and, we'll let you trade E-minis with $500 margins.
That's nutty.
It's totally nutty.
I don't get that at all.
If a person does that, they're going to care a lot.
Yeah, no kidding.
If they care a lot, they're going to be making decisions that are influenced by emotion, and their competition, the computers, are trading purely on math. So to me, to be successful, it requires far more than being smart. You also have to be able to free yourself of your emotions, and the best way to do that is to trade a small enough size so that you really don't care.
I agree. And it's interesting if you think about it, because you mentioned that you talk about how those three charts and there's no names on them, you don't know what they are and what they do. In a way, if you can look at, you have to look at eventually, but if you can look at the trade that you had going into the trade with the idea that, hey, this is the trade, these are the levels, this is where I believe, from all the things you've researched and whatever that may be, that I'm going to enter into a long, let's say. If it goes below this level, I'm going to get out of the position. If it goes above this level, I may either add on, or depending on the strength of it, I may take my profits, right? Now, the problem is that during that whole process, you got the profit and loss smacking you in the face the whole time. And it would almost seem more logical to kind of cover that part of the screen so that you don't see that, and you just trade on what the plan was to begin with. That seems to be a big detractor to people's ability to stay on task. I think for everybody, because it's their money and they don't want to lose it.
A lot of times traders, I think, take a trade that makes sense and they have a plan, and the plan makes sense. And then as the trade starts to unfold, they get nervous and they exit their trade.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say it's in the E-mini. Let's say the original plan was to use a 2-point stop and a 4-point profit target. And the market goes up 3 ticks and starts to pull back a little bit.
Right.
And they exit. Right. What I tell traders to do is, if you have a trade that makes sense mathematically, you have to trust what you're doing. And realize that, you're going to be wrong a certain amount of time. You're going to lose money a certain amount of time. But if you're micromanaging your trade and changing your plan after you get in, you should consider placing the trade and placing the bracket orders.
Right.
and going away and coming back in an hour and see how you do.
I'm serious.
The walking away from, if traders feel like they can't sit still once they're in their trade because they're just way too anxious, trade small, place the trade, place your bracket orders, walk away and come back in an hour.
Yep. So, is there anything else that you trade in terms of E-minis? You trade oil, corn, Nazis, anything?
Well, I used to trade everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 15 years ago, I started trading online with this old guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was in his 70s. Mm-hmm. And all he did was trade the E-minis all day long. And you know, he would take a look at the other markets every now and then. But all he did was trade the E-minis all day long. And his argument was that, you know, Al, if I just trade the E-minis and I trade it well, and even if I only make, you know, 4 or 5 points a day, if I trade enough volume, I'll make more than enough money to maintain my lifestyle.
Well, plus
at the time, he was trading 24 E-mini contracts a day.
Ah.
And when I was trading with him, he was probably averaging, I don't know, 10 to 15 points net a day per contract.
Nice.
So you know, if you do the math, rather than looking for lots of different charts and lots of different markets and looking at the 1 minute chart, 5 minute chart, 15 minute chart, range charts, you know, momentum charts, all those other market profile charts, instead of looking at a whole bunch of different things, if you do the math and if you can become consistently profitable, not even greatly profitable, not even making, you know, 10 points a day, but if you can consistently make 2 or 3 points a day, let's say 2 points a day, and you can work your way up to 100 contracts, all of a sudden, you're making a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, you're making, you know, $2 million a year.
Right.
So, to me, volume is, volume and consistency are much more important than, trading a bunch of different markets.
Yep. I hear you.
You know, when I'm looking at the 5 minute E-mini chart, I know that if I look at the Globex chart, there'll be other signals, other patterns that I would see. If I put up a 3 minute chart and a 15 minute chart and a 1 minute chart and a range chart and you know, a tick chart and a volume chart, there'll be all kinds of other patterns that I would see.
Right.
If I put up the NASDAQ and the Spider, I'd see other patterns. If I put up Apple and IBM and Google and Amazon and bonds and crude oil and gold, I would see all kinds of other great opportunities to make money. But the reality is I make far more money just trading a single chart,
right,
and just trying to do it really well and not worrying about what's taking place everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just sit down and do the math. You know, if you can get your volume up and you can trade consistently well in any one chart, it doesn't matter which market you pick. It doesn't matter what time frame you pick. It doesn't matter what chart you pick. If you can trade anything well, you know, just work on increasing your volume. Stay within your comfort zone, but just work on increasing your volume, and you can do extremely well.
Right. What you're saying is position sizing, obviously. And then, yeah, because if you think about it, if all you have to do is if you can make 2 points a day successfully, theoretically, then you do it, and you're doing it on one contract, let's say, and you do that for, pick a time, 6 months, a year, whatever it is. And if that's just consistently happening, just increase your sizing and then the profitability will be there.
You don't have to trade very large to make what doctors and lawyers make. You know, if you can get up to 10 contracts a day, you know, all of a sudden you're making what, you know, most doctors and lawyers make. And if you can get up to 25 contracts or 100 contracts, you know, you're making far more than doctors and lawyers.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Good stuff. Al Brooks Price Action. It's called brookspriceaction.com. We'll put the links on the website as well as the ways that you can get his books and check out his online study courses and check out his trading rooms and all the things that he's doing. And we'll make sure that we stay in touch, my friend.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks so much. Speak to you soon. So as you know, it is the start of earnings. Well, it's not the start. Last week was the start. It is the continuation of earnings season. And of course, we have the banks coming in this week that are going to be very, very interesting to watch. Citi, we also have Bank of America, Goldman, but there's also just a massive amount of smaller banks that are also reporting. And in the beginning of the earnings season, this is how it goes. It kind of, they clump them together. You have a lot of banks, in the beginning, and then you'll have some technology moving ahead, then you have retail in the end. They kind of rotate it around a bit and keep some of the blocks of, I guess, industry sometimes seem to be, they seem to be locked together a bit, you know, in one giant pile. We also have a lot of economics coming out for the week, CPI, PPI. Also want to mention that you have the retail sales coming out, which is very important to watch, and Consumer Confidence University of Michigan's January numbers at the end of the week. The other thing I'll mention to you that I thought was really kind of interesting, and I'm so, I don't know if I'm happy or disgusted, but the Treasury and the Fed nixed the idea, wherever it came from, of the trillion-dollar coin. Now, the skeptic in me says, well, they only do that so they can have a $100 trillion coin. You know, you never know with these guys what they're going to do. Maybe they're not just going to do one $1 trillion coin. Maybe they'll do many. Maybe who knows what the story is. But the idea of a trillion-dollar coin, which was circulating around, and I talked about this at length on the DH Unplugged show this week, is, you know, it was a, you know, a way to get around and to maneuver the debt ceiling discussion so that there would be no way for the proponents of raising the debt ceiling of them to have a problem. But the fact is that, you know, on a, you know, when you look at why the debt ceiling is in place, some people argue that it just makes no sense how the countries just, you know, utilize whatever debt that they have to pay their bills. But the whole point was to create some kind of, you know, a limit, obviously, some kind of safeguard that the government won't just keep on spending and spending and driving our currency to zero and getting themselves into a debt situation that is unsustainable, which, by the way, we are at this point. So the discussion, I think, is it has to happen. It doesn't have to happen in a way that's as adversarial as we know it's going to be. But I will say this, that we added another $2 trillion in the last several months since the last debt ceiling discussion, and we're tapped out already. And we're starting to spend money at a much greater velocity, and that's a real problem. Tax receipts are down, and that's why they had to do their best to increase the receipts in the last fiscal cliff discussion. But still, at the end of the day, there's still not enough receipts and too much spending that's going on. Something has got to give, and the question is going to be, which one? You know, we see that companies are concerned about their earnings and the outlook, like American Express. What'd they do? They axed 5,000 employees. And company after company will do what they can to cut expenses. It's only the government, the business that the government runs, which is not, you know, a business in any respect that you would look at, okay, well, what's my income, what's my expense? It's not even a personal household, because they run it as if there's no end in sight to the money, and you just keep on pumping it out. The responsibility has just gone out the window, and that's really unfortunate, because if you think about what really crashed down upon our heads in 2007, 2008, 2009, it was the massive debt by individuals. The reckless allowance of issuance of debt to individuals, yes, backed by the full faith and credit of their real estate, but what happens when you get the numbers that look so much larger and you have sovereigns that are backing the debt and the promise to pay back by the full faith and credit of the taxing power of their country, and they keep on issuing more and more debt to take in money, and wow, think about that. The terrible nature of what we felt in 2007 to 2009 when markets crashed and real estate values came down and high unemployment and all that is nothing compared to if these politicians continue to spend in such a way that we become almost replacing the debt that we had individually with the mountainous debt that we, you know, will have as a government. And those numbers have more zeros to them than we ever saw before. And as you notice, the spending and the amount of debt increase is expanding exponentially. So this is where we have to kind of keep a watch on the spending. And that's why the idea of the debt ceiling is in place, to regulate, control, and to contain any kind of, you know, absolute ridiculous amounts of spending. Anyway, so a couple of things to note. Clearly watch, if you are a subscriber to Trigger Points, research on the equities or the commodities. Watch, because we're going to see a lot of action in the next couple of weeks, and this is prime time for, you know, finding some great opportunities for short squeezes or for, you know, shorts if companies miss estimates. So if you haven't had your trial yet, you make sure that you do that very quickly. The other thing is that I'll mention next week, I think I mentioned this, that Amy Smith is with us from Investors Business Daily, and I look forward to talking with her. And she's always has some nice things to say. It's going to be a bit of a short show because we're going to do an interview, and probably that's it for next week. I have some business out of town I'm attending to, and then we'll be back with the full show the following week. Thanks for joining me. I hope you enjoyed the discussion today. I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented that should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.